Hello and welcome to Music Ally Focus with me, Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow. And in this episode, we're joined by Keatley Haldeman of the blockchainified music sync licensing platform, Dequency. Now, attention has moved a bit away from Web3 technology and shifted via the metaverse over to AI. So we thought it was a good time to check in and see how Web3 technology has progressed away from the glare of all that hype. Each Music Ally Focus episode analyzes one meaningful music business story at a time, just like this one. And so this podcast is also going to be quick. It should take about the same amount of time as Viswajith V could identify 1,200 dinosaurs. Hypothetically, of course, Viswajith, who was 6 years old at the time, identified 41 in 1 minute in 2023. And we say, good job, Viswajith. Now, talking of dinosaurs, it's tempting to buy into the hype beast proclamations of some people working in the crypto space who say that the music industry is stacked with dinosaurs just waiting to be slayed by Web3. Now, Keatley Haldeman is not that extreme in his views, but he does think that Web3 and blockchain technology will still transform the music industry. And so we talk to him about exactly that. We chat about what he thinks the long-term impact of Web3, crypto, and blockchain technology will be on the music business now that it's on the gentle upward slope of the hype cycle, and how Dequency is a good example, in his opinion, of aligning the needs of artists, content creators, and blockchain technology. Let's go over to our chat with Keatley right now. So we're very happy to welcome Dequency CEO Keatley Haldeman to the podcast. Hi, Keatley.
Hello. Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Great to speak to you. And for the benefit of listeners out there, Keatley is sitting in a delightful airstream with blue skies behind him out the window. So I'm feeling particularly jealous. But let's leave our glamorous backgrounds behind us for a moment. First, can you just explain by way of explanation, just for a bit of context, what do you do? Who are you? And what is Dequency?
Yeah, well, I think the easiest way to say all of that is to go way back. I've been playing music since I was very young, 5 years old. And then I was in band since I was about 11. Originally went to college for electrical engineering, robotics, because I didn't think, or rather my parents didn't think music was a proper job. And I thought I was supposed to get a proper job. So music wasn't in that category. Realized very quickly I did not want to be an engineer, or at least not a robotics engineer. And I found signal processing, which is the engineering behind all musical instruments, electronic instruments, software synthesizers, everything related to music, because music sound is a signal. So I transferred into that program, thought it was great, went to grad school, but took a year off in between undergrad and grad to go move into a house with my band and try to make it do the thing. We didn't get far enough. So I went to college for original electrical engineering and then transferred into a program called Music Science and Technology. That's really what set me off. But then right after that, I got rid of all the science and technology and just went deep into music and started composing music for TV, film, advertising, video games, got myself into another band, even though I swore I wouldn't. Yeah. And then that's really when I discovered sync. So I was trying to find a way to make money with the band, would pitch to music supervisors cold. And every time I would pitch the band, my music, they'd say, "Hey, this is great. What I really need right now is hip hop," or someone else says, "Yeah, what I really need right now is heavy metal. Do you have that?" So I realized I needed a catalog. So I just started gathering music and pitching it non-exclusively. And then as I was getting placements, then we would, royalties would come. So I figured out music publishing and built a music publishing company. And most recently it was Riptide Music Group. And I was CEO of Riptide Music Group from 2014 to 2021. That's where I met my co-founder of Dequency. And he told me about the idea of Dequency in 2017. He was very early in blockchain and music, and when we raised money for Riptide, he came along as an advisor and says, "Okay, we have a catalog. We have to start a sync licensing project on the blockchain." This was 2017. I didn't know anything about the blockchain. I looked at him like he was crazy. What do you mean? So I get very, very, very deep into crypto. I was fascinated by it, and I wanted to learn everything about it. And the through line with all of them was the idea of taking out the middleman, which is the whole thesis behind Bitcoin, and smart contracts. And I interpreted that as anything with a real world contract, you can automate using smart contracts. So that's when the light bulb went, because my whole world had been sync licensing for the last 20 years in the music industry. A sync license is a contract. So theoretically, you could automate that with smart contracts. And at least online licensing platforms, different than the traditional rights businesses, but online licensing companies, for the most part, don't own their music, and they're middlemen in between the music rights owner and the licensee. So, you know, when I heard this, people in crypto say, what was your red pill moment? This was my red pill moment. This is when everything just made sense. And so then I understood what George was talking about. And why is this important? And then this comes back to, what is dequency? So we looked at all the online licensing platforms, and the typical flow, if I'm a music rights owner and I want to work with one of them, is I email the A&R person, the gatekeeper, please listen to my music, tell me if I'm allowed to work with you. If they say no, then that's it. That distribution channel is closed. If they say yes, then they control the entire process. They set license fees. They dictate who gets to use the music. They take up to 70% commission, depending on the platform, and can take up to 6 months to pay. So we envisioned an open, two-sided, peer-to-peer sync licensing marketplace where music rights owners can upload their content, set their own fees, have approval rights if they desire, get paid instantly because it's crypto, and for very low transaction fees, which can be done because it's a much more efficient technology, a much more efficient system, and more beyond that. But that's where we are.
So there's a lot there, which is a sort of, you know, we've heard the like you say, the promise of crypto, or let's say the specific forms of crypto where there are smart contracts and there's an automated element along with the immutable ledger element. So you've got, you know, it's sort of recorded, and then something happens as a consequence of it. And as you say, this sort of, there's been a lot of promise around that, but it's becoming clear at the moment, at least in these initial stages moving forwards, that it applies to certain parts of certain industries better than others, in the sense that there are already contracts in these industries, there's already a relationship around payment, and it sort of fits in. So how would people, you mentioned there, there's a traditional system with gatekeepers, and that's recognizable across the music industry. So how do people use the platform, Dequency, from the both sides? You've got a two-sided marketplace. You've got music creators and visual content creators who need music. So how do they engage with it? How do they seal that contract between the two parties? And how is it better?
Yeah, no, great question. So at our core, we Dequency are not in the middle of the transaction. We're a platform that enables a peer-to-peer licensing transaction. So a music rights owner could be an independent artist, could be a catalog. We work with both. Right now, whoever is uploading the music has to control both rights, master and publishing, 100%. We will be expanding and being able to license more complex copyrights as time goes on, but we need to start simple to begin with. So if I own my music, I can. It's a similar process to uploading to a distributor, you know, to TuneCore or whatever. So you can upload your assets, you can upload your picks, you create an artist profile, you can set your own fees. As of last week, we just launched a new version of the platform that has expanded licensing rights. We were only licensing for Web3 media up until very recently, but now we can license for podcasts and student films, marketing videos, training videos, all, you know. We're still not licensing through the platform to the major television and film producers and ad agencies, mainly just because they don't really use these kinds of platforms anyway, at least not right now. So we're focusing on all the massive.
But if I was a YouTuber making, I could come and get music for my video.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, you know, if I'm an artist, I own my own music, I upload it, I can either set my own fees, or we have now two standardized pricing matrices that you can choose from. It's sort of a low tier and a high tier. At first, it was just sort of a free for all, and then we could set whatever fees they want. And then we heard from artists and catalogs. So they said, "Great, what should I charge?" So we decided, well, let's create some guides so that people can just sign on and say, "Yeah, I want to be part of this pricing group." Or still, if they want, because we still have professional catalogs and publishing companies and labels who want that level of control, and that's that's what's different about Dequency. Hey, so why do people want to use this? There's no other online licensing platform out there right now that gives this level of control to music rights owners, where they can set their own fees, choose not to. They can choose to set fees for these certain types of uses and not for these types of uses, which in those cases, if somebody wants to license one of those songs and there isn't a price, well, now they can seek a quote and go through that that process. But really, the goal is to just give the most flexibility possible to music rights owners. Now, then why do music users, the licensees, why do they care about that? Well, they care about it because the caliber of music that is up on Dequency that Dequency attracts because of this level of control is greater than you can find anywhere else for any online licensing platform.
Where does your income come from in that? You're not in the middle of this. You're providing the platform, so you take a percentage of the agreed fee, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we take a 5% fee now if it's a transaction in crypto, and 10% if it's with credit card. And most of that delta goes to the credit card processing companies, which is why crypto. That's why crypto, because there are less fees.
So I mean, which leads me to my next question, which is a common thing that I'm hearing people say more and more now. We've already. You said, in 2016, 2017, there was this sort of golden era of sort of, I would say, innocent interest in crypto. And then there was this explosion of interest.
Less innocent.
Yeah. Not saying it became like a sort of, a swamp, but it became a lot more, the risks were more apparent then. And we've calmed down to a place now where we're seeing the benefits of the technology perhaps more. So the question I'm hearing a lot now from talking to people in the music industry is like, yes, but could this not be done without the blockchain? So you've already said there, one of the key improvements is, from your perspective, is you pay in crypto, you don't take that overhead of the fees. But what are the other key benefits of a blockchainified relationship for syncing songs like this?
Yeah, so there are a few things, and I'll talk about our enterprise side of the business as well, which I think we'll answer the question a slightly different way. I mean, so this blockchain, crypto, Web3, they're all related, but they're all slightly different. Blockchain is the underlying technology that enables crypto, and Web3 is really the applications that are using smart contracts and blockchain. Sometimes it also uses crypto, sometimes not. NFTs are these, NFT is crypto. It's just a non-fungible crypto. So it's its own unique token. But it's all related. The core is that it's a peer-to-peer transaction. And why does a peer-to-peer transaction make sense? Why does anyone care about that? It's because you take out the middleman. That means you take out the fees, you take out the delays, you take out the complexities. So if you kind of like boil it down to first principles like that, then you can see where for sync licensing, that can be quite interesting. For other things in the music side as well, it's quite interesting. Streaming, direct payments, more accurate payments. You can broaden it out and say, what if we had a smart contract system where every single song in the world was represented by a smart contract, and baked into that smart contract were the splits, both for the recording side and the composition side, and everybody agreed to pay into that, all the DSPs, all the PROs, everyone. So now, as soon as a stream happens on Spotify, it pings right into that smart contract, and all the rights holders are paid instantly, transparently, without having to wait, without any dispute, and without any black box. Like that's the great promise of what could happen with this technology. And why couldn't you just do that with Web2 technology or what exists today? It's because somebody's going to own that technology. Someone's going to own that data. Someone's going to own that database. Whereas if you set things up the right way with Web3 blockchain technology, it's actually a decentralized application that, yes, humans and a coordinated organization has to create that. But once it's created and deployed out into the blockchain, it now lives. It exists forever, without anyone owning it. Now you probably have a DAO that's going to manage it, but that's a different thing than a for-profit company or even a nonprofit company actually owning it and controlling it.
So the advantages there seem, so from that telling, you know, fairly clear that it's sort of more streamlined, it's direct, it's not losing money, as it were, in the middle. But what about on a sort of more, like you said, the enterprise level? You've struck partnerships recently with, for example, Cyanite, who are a company that use AI to analyze catalogs, and people use that technology to dig through their catalogs, for instance. So how does that work then? You've got, like, you're now bringing AI into the equation as well as blockchain, for instance, which, and I can see how those two things fit together, you know, especially around smart contracts and things like that. But what about the enterprise perspective then, when you are connecting with, let's say, existing major catalogs?
Yeah, no, great question. So there's multiple enterprise parts of the conversation. One is enterprise to incorporate within the Dequency application. That's what you were talking about with Cyanite. We brought in Cyanite to help tag our music. And that was important because prior to that partnership, if somebody uploaded their music to Dequency, they had to tag it themselves. So describe it with genre, subgenre, you know, keywords, all these different things. The challenge there is there's no standardization for the tagging. So now a user who wants to come and find music, maybe this artist thinks that this music is sunshiny and bright, you know, but then the person who's trying to find that music isn't using those terms, sunshiny and bright. They're using other terms that are similar to it. So by having some sort of standardized metadata tagging, it just makes that process better. Also, it makes the process better for those who are uploading the music, because then it reduces their workload for having to do that. But that's an integration into our application. When I was talking about the enterprise side of what we're looking at, which is not that public, when you go to Dequency.io, it's really providing music for Web3 media companies, metaverse games, Web3 social media, Web3 and collectibles, anything that resolves down to this audiovisual digital asset. That they still require a sync license, but the crypto Web3 industry doesn't understand the music industry, and the music industry doesn't understand the Web3 crypto industry. So we're a bridge to help license at scale to these platforms.
Right. So hypothetically, for instance, if I was making a metaverse experience or game or something, I could come to Dequency and say, right, I need this kind of song, and then that would that be automated? Between the metaverse experience and Dequency on even an individual user basis, so it could react to the user's needs or what?
Yeah, no, so good question. So first of all, I will say, you know, Dequency is a young platform, so many of these things that we're talking about, we have the capability to do, but we will need to modify in a bespoke way for each enterprise.
Sure, I'm racing ahead with my ideas.
But your idea is totally right. I'll give you an exact idea. So we're speaking to one of the larger metaverses right now, which is a decentralized metaverse. And this is where I think things get quite exciting. So we've built our marketplace, but really we've got the engine, which is our content management system and our blockchain licensing system. So what that means is when somebody buys a sync license on Dequency, they get an NFT in their wallet. That NFT represents their sync license. Now, what can you do with that NFT? And that's where things get exciting. In a decentralized metaverse, they still need music licenses. And last year, SOCAN, which is the Canadian PRO, was looking pretty heavily at Decentraland and a lot of the Web3 platforms, because they said, like, you have users that are using music, you don't have a license with any of the PROs, you're in violation, so we need to remedy that. And Decentraland said, well, we're decentralized, what do you mean? There's nothing we can do, it's on the users. And so the token said, okay, well, we're going to go after each user. That's not good for the users, it's not good for Decentraland, it's not good for anybody. So Decentraland took that to a DAO vote and said, should we as the DAO get a license with SOCAN? And it got denied. So all of the owners of Decentraland said, no, we don't want to do this. It's on the landowners. Now, I'm not sure. Then everything went quiet, right? So I don't know the state of that right now. Probably my guess is it's just too difficult to go after each individual landowner, and there isn't enough there. But everyone hopes that it will grow, because if it doesn't become interesting enough for the music industry to demand licensing, then the whole experiment has failed, right?
Well, yeah, that's it. If there's not enough money, if it's not worth them going to get the money, then it's not successful in the first place, right?
Right. Yeah. So we're speaking to a different metaverse right now, which is also decentralized, understanding that they're going to need to get this right. They want to get it right. But they're a decentralized entity. So they can't and certainly don't want to get a license from the top, from this centralized source, because they're decentralized. Okay, so how then can they make this system work? One thing they could do is say, build into their code, I am going to detect music in the landowner's space. If I detect music, look in their wallet. Do they have an NFT license in their wallet? If yes, then great, I will allow them to continue to display the music. If no, then silence the music. That makes the landowner safe. It makes the metaverse on the whole safe. It also creates a revenue source for the metaverse because they have their own NFT marketplace. And we're talking about integrating Dequency right into their NFT marketplace so that now their users can browse, buy, have a standardized rate, a very low rate, be similar to like a streaming rate or digital download kind of rate. Mm-hmm. And then now, you know, we're sharing revenue with the metaverse. That's where the partnership comes into play. The landowners have a legal licensing model and everyone's compliant and it works.
Yeah. And again, I guess this is where that the part you were saying about transaction fees comes in, because then you've got lots of these things going on and these are small amounts that accumulate over scale. And if you had lots of transaction fees in there, it wouldn't make sense. So that's how that works at that kind of level. That's why transaction fees are important, I guess. And so in this situation, if it goes ahead like this, so let's say I owned a piece of metaverse. I owned a club in the metaverse, which I've been to some of these clubs. I didn't enjoy any of them, but let's say I did a really good one. I didn't feel like being in a real club. I'm sure someone will get it right. So let's say I got it right.
I hope so.
I build a club in the metaverse, and I want to play music in there, obviously. So with that license, I guess would be on a per song basis initially. But is that what you're saying?
Initially, yeah. I mean, I like the idea of also getting an NFT for a playlist as well.
Right. Okay.
Which would probably would be a bundle. But these are. Start with the concepts and then we drill it down to see, okay, what's the actual use case? What do people want to do? It's all very early.
But I mean, at the moment when it is early, so a metaverse experience is you often go and you go into a metaverse experience, you hear one song playing, maybe a couple of songs playing. So really you're licensing at that basis now, but there's scope for whatever in the future.
That's right.
Interesting. Okay. I don't want to go too deep into the technology side of things because... because you can get bogged down very quickly there, as I'm sure you know. But one thing I'm interested in is there are so many different flavors of framework that you can use. You've chosen Algorand to run Dequency on, and I'm without going into too much sort of the ins and outs on the technological side. But why did you choose that one in particular? Well, how does it assist what you're trying to do? This particular blockchain.
Yeah, no, great question. So Algorand was a very early supporter of Dequency. They really guided us through getting into this world. I didn't come from the blockchain world. I came from the traditional music world and just was an enthusiast in the space. And they were a really wonderful family for us. Gave us a grant. Really helped us raise money, and they've been great. Also, they had a very strong music focus. So Opulous is one of the early music NFT platforms. Last year, Algorand bought Napster. Napster is behind the scenes working to become really the first commercial Web3 streaming platform. It's quite interesting. Yeah. So, you know, as a group, they care about music. We are looking to go multi-chain as well. You know, I think the reality is as things have shaken out, EVM, Ethereum-based crypto is a much more widely used crypto, and the wallets and infrastructure is much more widely used. So, we are looking at that space as well, so that we can run on both. And actually, if you look at many of the projects that are out there, regardless, they end up going multi-chain because you want to go to where the users are, and users pick a chain that they like, or maybe they pick multiple chains, and you want to make sure that you're servicing everyone.
So, like I, we sort of talked about, we touched on this earlier, which is the hype train has moved through various different sectors of technology in recent years. We've gone from, well, I like to go back to sea shanties, if you remember that, sort of, which wasn't technology, but that was a kind of weird craze back in the early in early 2020. And then from there, we went to NFTs, then we went to Web3, then we went to Metaverse, and now we're on AI. And we've kind of gone through all these crazes very quickly. And one thing I'm hearing people saying is, well, you know, Web3 at the moment, we're sort of waiting, having jumped in, we're now hesitating, maybe not hesitating, but waiting to see, because there is a lot moving around it, you know, specifically with Algorand, but with lots of other tokens at the moment, Solana, Decentraland's Mana token, that, you know, they're running into discussions with the SEC in the USA about whether it's a security or not, and a whole bunch of other legalities then step in. There's questions around, you know, whether the decentralized nature of these technologies are what maybe people make people feel comfortable at the moment or not. You know, there's some, I'm not saying that these are bad things, but there's these things are going on and they're causing people to say, well, should I involve myself now or should I just step back a bit? How do those things affect what you're doing in terms of where the rubber hits the road and you say, right, I just want to go and strike deals with people and get catalogs involved and make things happen. Are you seeing any sort of friction there?
Yeah, I think a lot of people that got into crypto Web3 around when I did or on the first cycle in 2015, 2016, got very excited about the philosophy around crypto. And and certainly for me, that was the case. And it was just the ideas that were coming out were so amazing. It was this new technology all based on peer-to-peer and crypto. And for us, you know, our initial vision was to mint our own token. And really that's how, you know, the plan was to subsidize everything with that token. And people then care about the token and want to come use it to earn rewards and gamify the whole system and all of that. You know, that has to be on hold just due to everything that you said with the regulatory environment and just understanding more about where things sit with that. So sure, you know, I can see where people who got fascinated with the crypto piece, that's maybe waned a little bit. But Web3 blockchain technology is a fundamental technology and infrastructure that I'm confident will continue to grow because there's just such great use cases for it without a token. If you look at Sound.xyz, Sound doesn't have a token. They just raised $20 million and have opened up the NFT platform to everybody. You know, that should make a lot of people more interested in seeing that and trying it out. And then once you try that out, now you kind of get into the world. Now you have a crypto wallet. Now, okay, what else can I do with this crypto that I'm earning? Oh, now I can go here. Now you kind of get in. It's like if you go to, I mean, you're in Europe, but you know, I'm in the States. So if I go to Europe, now I have euros. Oh, what can I buy with these euros? I can buy this with this euros. I can buy this, right? So you kind of get into the world, you get into that economic system, and then you want to explore all the games that you can play. And that's a lot of how crypto is too. And so people who have already experienced that, and then now through this last couple of years, seeing all of these new games coming up, really, that's what it is. Like, what are these worlds? Some of them are metaverses, some of them are games, some of them are music, some of them are, you know, gambling and DeFi and whatever, but it's all virtual fun. And that's not going away. I mean, there's still the VC funding has dried up pretty well, but these all come in cycles anyway. So I think right now, it's still very exciting to come and explore and see who's there and play around with it.
The one thing we've been saying for a long time is that whatever you think of Web3 and NFTs and crypto, is that whether you think they're the best thing since sliced bread or not, that they are going to form a, like you say, a framework of a protocol layer of the way businesses work in the future. And you don't have to get involved with them, but they're going to be there. And I guess, do you feel like this is part of that process of reaching that point where this technology becomes part of the protocol of future business?
Yeah, I mean, I think the hype is nice for ideas and experimentation and funding. You know, Sequency is an experiment. You know, it's an exciting experiment. Everyone doing anything in Web3, crypto, blockchain, everyone's just experimenting. And fortunately, there are people with a lot of money willing to play and experiment as well. But out of that experimentation, absolutely has come and will come more world-changing ideas and world-changing frameworks for growing. That's where the internet came from. You know, early days of the internet, Web 1.0, you know, there were a lot of people outside of the internet world said, this is crazy. No one's ever going to buy stuff online. No one's ever going to do banking online. The security is, you know, not there. It'll never happen. And look today, you know, who doesn't use the internet? Everyone uses the internet. And what is likely to happen with Web3 blockchain is it just gets integrated and people stop talking about it.
Yeah, you don't see it anymore. It's just there.
You don't see it. You don't talk about it. You don't talk about HTTP, which is, you know, the web protocol, or SMTP, which is the email.
I don't know how email works, and I use it all day.
Yeah,
you know?
And it runs on a public protocol, really, at this point.
Yeah.
So that's what Web3 will ultimately be. It's just new and exciting. Like when email came out, I was like, ooh, electronic mail.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I also remember that. It was genuinely exciting, yeah. So let's look ahead a bit then. You know, let's talk about the future of, I mean, this is a big question, but from your perspective, Dequincy, the future of music licensing, this kind of technology does take off that you're saying. You say it's an experiment, but you know, a lot of hard work is going into making this kind of stuff
Absolutely.
Work. So how do you foresee the future of music licensing? Perhaps in whatever terms you think, in terms of how it works, how artists are rewarded, what's the future if this kind of technology sticks?
Yeah, so I think the future is that the grand future is that all music licensing is done through Dequincy or a system like Dequincy, where right now it is such a pain to license music. If for your podcast, you want to go license a Justin Bieber song, okay, what are you going to do? Where do you start? How do you even have a clue how much it's going to cost? You don't know. Even if you're a professional person, in the industry, you know you're going to go to the public PRO databases to find out who the songwriters are, find out who the publishers are. Then you can see the contact information. Hopefully, it's not always there. You know, info@BMG. And then you hope you can get to the right person who will answer your email or answer your phone call and give you a quote request. Then you've got to do the same thing on the recording side. But if there's a featured rapper on that song, well, now there might be another label that has to get a clearance as well. Okay, so step one is there needs to be some system that simplifies that whole thing and allows for the user to come and say, well, I have a podcast. I use a general range of what it might cost based on who the rights holders are. And then now I can fill out my information, click a button, and it seeks a quote request to all the rights holders to then be able to, and then now the rights holders say, okay, I have an incoming request, and then can facilitate that license in parallel with everybody, and then come to a good resolution for that. And then on the licensor side, publishing companies and record labels, it's such a pain to deal with the administration of those licenses. Now, today, without a system like that, you, the podcast producer, you've now figured out how to contact the person. Great, congratulations. Now you contact BMG, Cobalt, and they get the person there gets a quote request. Now they have to field that, go back to you, probably ask some questions, maybe some negotiation back and forth. Now you come to a fee, great. Then they issue you a license. You're going to have questions about it. Maybe they negotiated, maybe not. And then, you know, it's $1,000, $2,000. And Cobalt has a 10% administration fee on the song, but they don't even have 100% of the song. They have 30% of the song, right? Now they're making $30 on this, and then they have to send you an invoice. They have to chase you up for payment because you're not paying, because that happens. Then they have to receive the money and process that money. They've lost money in that transaction. So they would rather just say no to that. But then the songwriter that they represent doesn't want that because they want the use. They want the money. But so the point is, it's broken for everybody. It doesn't work. So the future of music licensing is using technology like this to simplify the process, starting with this database and starting with this, and then having the whole flow be more automated to the benefit of everyone.
And that's where the smart contracts come in, because it's because there's that earlier ease of connectivity, and let's say there's an agreement, then once that's agreed, the contract part is taken care of, right? That's the quick part, and the payment part is assured, and so all that inefficiency is sort of cut out by the technology underlying the whole thing itself.
Yeah, that's right. It's really that peer-to-peer nature of it, and then also with the payment side. So the payment side, that's the question mark for how the world figures itself out. You know, crypto only works, the efficiency of crypto only works if everybody's transacting crypto and receiving crypto in their crypto wallets. Now that doesn't have to be you know, a token like a Ethereum or Algo or whatever. It could be USDC, which is pegged to the US dollar. So it doesn't have to be a fluctuating value token, but it is still a cryptocurrency token. It's when you convert that to fiat, it's when you convert it to your bank accounts, that there are fees in that too. So what is likely to happen, not next year or the year after, but probably in 10 years, is that all banking is going to be done on crypto rails, which means everyone's going to be able to receive crypto, everyone's going to have crypto wallets, they're going to be integrated into bank accounts, there isn't going to need to be this conversion. And when that happens, that instant payment, you know, with very, very low fees is a reality.
Okay. Well, I'll put a link to Dequency below the podcast, and people can check out, you know, for themselves how it works and what you do and how that whole system may pan out for them. As a final question, then, to sort of add context, you said that you started out as a musician. You're clearly someone who's very passionate about music. As context for all of that, if you could only choose one piece of music forever, Keith Lee, this can be a song or an album. I'm being flexible these days, but if you could only pick one thing, what would it be?
Oh, wow, interesting. Sublime 40 Ounces to Freedom.
Right. Okay. Go on. Why that?
You know, it was a pivotal time in my life. I grew up in Orange County, California, and I still listen to that album, and the lyrics are brilliant. Bradley's voice is amazing. The mix of hip-hop, reggae, and punk is very much me musically, and it still sounds fresh to me. I don't know if this is that old, but still sounds very fresh to me. When I play it for my kids, they still think it sounds cool too.
And they liked it as well. You see, it is a landmark album of its time and of that kind of mix of music, isn't it? It's definitely one of those ones that has survived. So there you go.
Absolutely.
Well, as long as you've got something that makes you happy, that's all that's important. All right. Keith Lee Haldeman, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it. Thanks to Keith Lee again for joining us here on the Focus Podcast. If you found that useful, please share it on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. And if you'd like to stay in touch with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at joe@musically.com. We also have a free weekly email that comes out every Friday with a wet thud. It's called The Knowledge, and it rounds up a soupçon of the best analysis, news, marketing insight, and skills from all across Music Ally's suite of services. So sign up and become a better person, frankly. Links are in the description, as always. And that's it. So thank you very much for joining us, as ever, here on the Music Ally Focus Podcast. You've been you, I've been Joe Sparrow, and until next time, farewell.